Hello, I'm Paul Dibdahl. Welcome to another edition of The Good Word. Our topic this week is love. My conversation partners are Dr. Dave Thomas and Dr. Carl Kosart, both colleagues of mine in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Thank you both for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
How about if we start off with that first question? Many of us have grown up hearing that God is love, and of course that's a quote from the Bible itself, God is love. But when we begin reading in our Bibles in the Old Testament, sometimes it's difficult for people to see the love that God has. In fact, if we start even at the very beginning, the creation story, might there be some things there in that story that would indicate to us that indeed God is love?
It's interesting for this issue because if we look for the word love, we wouldn't actually find it there in the opening chapters. But we see it, I think, in some of the actions of God behind the scenes and what he's doing. So I think we can find it in that way. So not a direct way, but kind of the background.
Okay.
You know, I would agree with that. I'm fascinated by the description of God's actions there. Let us. Not I'm going to do it whether you like it or not, but let us is something that to me allows for at least a willing participation of whomever's active in creation. And even after creation itself is made, creation itself is given the parameters in which to live and have its own being and even grow and develop, which I think arises out of that statement, let us.
I think even in the acts of creation, you see God's love behind it. I kind of think, when I ever think of creation, I think of my family when we'd be preparing for a baby. And, you know, we'd do the prep work, we'd get the room ready, we'd get the toys. And, you know, we never left the room just, you know, white walls with nothing on them. We always decorated them. And it wasn't for ourselves. It was for the child. We wanted to give them a loving environment. I think you see, therefore, in creation, the diversity of creation, the relationships that he makes, the beauty of the world, the different colors. This tells me that God is a God of love because he wanted a very special place for his children.
Yeah, kind of, I think it's been referred to as the nesting instinct. I know when my mother was pregnant and about to give birth with my oldest sister, they lived in an apartment, and the people downstairs said that they knew the baby was just about to come because they could hear the vacuum cleaner going upstairs in the middle of the night. It's just this nesting instinct that my mother had to prepare the place for the child to come. I like that very much. It's interesting to me, too, to compare the creation account in the Bible with other ancient Near Eastern creation accounts, and I think when you compare those two, you see how the God of the Bible is depicted so differently from some of those other creation accounts. In other creation accounts, the gods create humans because they want to rest, for example.
Slave labor, basically.
Basically, yeah. They're tired of working, and so they create humans so that the humans can do the work. And provide food for the gods. And here in Genesis, for example, you have God who provides food for his creation, and then he gives them, as sort of the crowning act of creation, he gives them rest instead of just the opposite.
Yeah.
So I think a variety of the gift of marriage and probably other things that we could
And also the fact that the pronouncement at the end of the whole creative process was that it was good.
Yes.
Which I think that loving people tend to do good things. Rascals do rascally things.
Certainly much more that we could talk about in the Old Testament. But if we were to move on into the New Testament, certainly I think most Christians would agree that Jesus is the one who demonstrates the fullness, really, of God's love for humanity. But Jesus was not always so tender as we might imagine, even. He, at one point, called one of his own disciples Satan. He sometimes scolded and rebuked people. Mm. What might this suggest about Jesus' love?
I think one of the most interesting stories is one that's mentioned in all the Gospels. John puts it a little different place, but that is the story of Jesus cleansing the temple. He comes in. In fact, John actually mentions that he takes a rope, a whip. He makes a whip out of these cords of rope, and he drives them out. One of the things I find that's interesting that is only mentioned in Matthew 21, verse 14, is that after he does this, it says, "And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them."
Yeah.
So I don't think we can just say, well, look at this act. He was, you know, this kind of act of violence. But then you say, well, why was that? Why did that take place? And here you see it's because some people were being excluded from the temple. So this is an act of love, of justice, because the temple is a place for all people. And here you see it being limited.
So love is something more maybe than just a sort of touchy-feely
emotion.
Emotion, but that there can be action, certainly, a vigorous action even.
Yeah, I think that love is one of the things that motivates us to sometimes be involved in social disobedience and social action. Love sometimes causes you to do hard things, to stand up and be counted, and cause other people to face the music, so to speak, I think. I mean, we see that sometimes in the dynamic of a parent and a child. You know, sometimes the best thing you can do for your child is let them face the music or the consequences, or even create an occasion where they have to do that. Mm-hmm. And that can be described as being the most loving thing you can do when you look in the big picture.
Mm-hmm. They call it tough love, and it is tough to do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. Now, Jesus, of course, taught about love. He modeled love, but he also taught about it. And quoting the Old Testament in Matthew 22, Carl, you referenced Matthew already, but in Matthew 22, verse 39, Jesus said that we should love our neighbor as we love ourselves. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Is it safe? I don't know. I guess I can ask this question. Is it safe to conclude that we should love ourselves, or that we must love ourselves before we're able to love others? How would you react to that? Got to love yourself first.
No, I think I think we confuse self-love and self-identity or self-worth. I don't think self-worth and self-love are the same thing. To have a healthy respect for my personhood is different than loving myself. I think loving yourself very quickly turns into a very selfish exercise. I think to see yourself as a child of God and to have established your identity in a wholesome way is different than saying, I love myself.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. I think that true self-worth or self-love is not found in myself, but it's found at Calvary.
Yeah.
That's the real measure of self-love.
And, so and in Eden, mm-hmm. Those two places.
True.
By virtue of your creation and your redemption, you're a valuable, lovable human being who has an identity that makes you very worthwhile. If you have that, then you are free to love. If you are simply taking care of your own interests first, then I think your love is very shallow and very compromised.
And when does that process ever stop of taking care of ourselves? It would be a continual process of trying to do that.
Yeah, because the human mind has an amazing capacity to rationalize. See, when I have my new car and my new house and my new everything, then I'll be in a position to take care of the poor and the needy.
That's never going to happen.
Never going to happen.
Yeah.
Did we disappoint you with that one, Carl?
Yeah, no. That was okay. In fact, I think good answers. Even. Good answers. Sticking with that same chapter for just a little bit, Matthew 22, verses. It's actually in that same section that I referenced, verses 34 through 40. We could also turn to Romans chapter 13, and we find there from both Jesus and the Apostle Paul that there is some sense in which the one who loves fulfills the law. Now, that's the way my translation describes it. I mean, that sounds a little kind of mushy, doesn't it? Well, just if you love, then that's really all that counts. That's the fulfillment of
kind
the
like
law.
Kind of like this so-called new morality where, you know, it's just love, and so you can break the law,
that's
but as long
right.
as it's done, love.
Yeah, don't talk to me about doctrine and commands and all that. Just love. That's all. That's the fulfillment of the law. Either of you want to tangle with that one a little bit.
It's an interesting passage. So the verse I like to quote when we come to this one is Paul's verse in Galatians chapter 5, verse 14. He says, "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." And it's interesting to know what Paul does there in Galatians. He talks a lot about these people who are saying you have to be circumcised in order to find salvation. Mm-hmm. And he begins to kind of posit this kind of two different themes. For example, in Galatians 5, verse 3, he says, "I testify again to every man who accepts circumcision that he's obligated to do or to keep the law." I think the law really is about our relationship to others. And you can try to keep it in point-by-point action. You can do the law, but you really can't satisfy the demands of the law, its fullness, unless love becomes the motivating factor for why you do it. And I think that's what Paul is doing there. He's saying that anything done without the motivation of love falls short. It's just actions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, Carl. I think that there is this thing called the letter of the law and the substance or the heart of the law.
The spirit of the law.
And all of us are aware in life that you can keep the letter of the law and still miss the intent for which it was given. Mm-hmm. I think that's why Jesus summarized the law, so it condensed it. And in this regard, I would throw in the well-known parable of the sheep and the goats. You know, which is a very challenging thing to read, because as you come to the climax of that, you discover that the difference between the sheep and the goats is not some difference of legality, but did they do the things which the law embodied, namely care for the lost and the naked and the prisoner and so forth. And to me, the most challenging part of that parable is that when confronted with the reality of their goodness, the sheep are surprised. Okay. They say, well, when did we do that? You know, it's not that they think, well, we have these requirements, we must visit the people in prison, we must feed the hungry, you know, and I've done this now, I've checked it off. But this becomes something that takes up residence in their lives so that they don't even notice that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it becomes that expression, I think, of love. Yeah. And so I can think of a marriage, you know, if I could boil my marriage down into a list of do's and don'ts, and I could do all those things, and it could be a very unfulfilling relationship.
Yes.
Because
very no cold.
Very cold.
Yeah. Yeah, for both you and for your spouse.
Yes. Certainly.
I have done what I was required.
Yes. Now, we've managed so far, and we're coming close to the end of our time here, we've managed to talk about love. We haven't directly referenced probably the most well-known chapter on love, 1 Corinthians 13. And it echoes some of what we've said here about the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. The Apostle Paul says, you know, I could speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but if I have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy, can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing.
Mm-hmm. Spirit of the law.
Yeah.
Spirit of love, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your part in our discussion today, Dave and Carl. I'd also like to thank Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer. And finally, I'd like to thank you for listening in. I hope you'll join us again next week. For The Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.
We've probably all heard someone say, you have to have faith. But what does that really mean anyway? Hello.